And now on Radio 4, the jazz pianist Jamie Cullum continues on his journey into the world of the piano.
Welcome to the second part of my piano pilgrimage. My name's Jamie Cullum and I'm travelling around the UK finding out how the piano came to play such a central role in the social life of this country. In this programme, I'm going to be looking at those special places where the piano was an essential part of life. In the home.
It was very important for young women of a certain station to be able to play the piano and to sing. And it was widely held that the ability to play the piano actually made a young woman more marriageable.
At school.
Kids can go to the internet, they can download their favourite song, they can get the words of the song, they can get the chords of the for the piano. I hear some of our girls doing that and I think that's wonderful and I would encourage them to do that.
And down the pub.
My mum virtually brought us up playing the piano in the pubs and clubs around London. Brought so much happiness and puts food on the table, so piano means everything to me.
I'm starting off where I left you at the end of the last programme, here at the Brontes' old family home in West Yorkshire. Now, the landscape out on the moors, outside this window here, is really just as Emily Bronte describes it in Wuthering Heights. It's kind of windswept and raining. Actually, we've had the odd burst of sunshine, but it really is what I describe as Wuthering Heights weather. So you can really imagine the three sisters, Charlotte, Anne and Emily, all spending hours alone up there, with their only entertainment really being their writing and the piano. We heard from Ken Forrest in the last programme about how he came to restore the Brontes' old piano. I'm going to talk now to the museum's executive director, Anne Sumner, and the collections manager, Anne Dinsdale, to find out what role the piano would have played in the Brontes' home life. Thank you for letting me look around this amazing place. One of the things that struck me walking in here is actually it's really very small. It's very, very modest.
Yeah, it probably would have been one of the grander houses in Haworth. But they were certainly not wealthy by any means. Patrick Bronte had no independent income.
So would a typical middle-class family been able to afford a piano like this one at this time?
They would certainly have aspired to one. Patrick Bronte, he fostered his children's talents, and one of them was music. They were all quite passionate about art and music, and we know that the piano was acquired by 1833.
What would life have really been like for the Brontes here? Was there any entertainment to speak of apart from the piano?
There was some entertainment, yeah, but they were all quite close together in age and they didn't need a lot of outside company. Obviously they were involved in the village to a certain extent, but they made a lot of their own entertainment. So they played the piano, they read, they wrote, they painted, they drew. We don't think Charlotte played. Apparently she was extremely short-sighted, and the theory is that she was too short-sighted to actually read music. She certainly enjoyed listening to it, but it was mainly Emily that was the pianist of the family, and she's recorded as playing with precision and brilliancy.
Why did so many women learn to play the piano in that era, and why was it important?
There was a really elaborate set of courtship etiquette rules, and it was very important for young women of a certain station to be able to play the piano and to sing. And it was widely held that the ability to play the piano actually made a young woman more marriageable, more eligible to find.
I agree with that.
Find an appropriate fiancé. So performing duets was also really one of the few reputable occasions when a young man and woman could actually court, either in front of the family or certainly very close to their chaperones. There's an interesting example, actually, Emma Wedgwood, who's 10 years older than Emily Bronte, so she was born in 1808, and she actually was very renowned for her piano playing, and she was actually taught by Chopin, and it did attract her a really important husband. I mean, she married Charles Darwin, so there you go, it did work.
Is there any evidence of this sort of attitude towards women and the piano in any of the sisters' books?
There is, actually. In Jane Eyre, there's a very well-known episode where Blanche Ingram is playing the piano and Rochester is accompanying her. He's singing.
Oh, yes, of course.
And Blanche has is out to capture Rochester.
It's not always that the romance is attracted around the piano. I mean, there's that wonderful painting, well-known painting in the Tate Gallery, William Holman Hunt, The Awakening Conscience of 1853, when in fact the gentleman is sitting there with his mistress on his knee, and she has that moment when she leaps up and has a sort of revelation that she's not going to be his mistress anymore. So there are other connotations, and as the century goes on, you have people like Frank Huddleston Potter, also painting at the Tate, with a very bored-looking woman by the piano, and also with a fan, and obviously playing the piano and being able to flirt with your fan were two of the things you could actually do with your fiancé, and it is in fact his fiancé that he paints in that picture.
Now, a lot of people come across a piano for the first time at school. The majority of schools still have a piano, but the amount it gets used varies a lot. It mainly depends on the teacher's passions and skills. One school where the piano is still very much part of everyday life is at St Mary's College in the city of Londonderry in Northern Ireland. I'm sitting in the school hall of an amazing building on the outskirts of the city. It's St Mary's College for Girls. It moved to this brand new campus about 3 years ago, and I'm sitting at a beautiful grand piano, and there's another one in the foyer here as well. That's because the piano, music generally, is a very important part of the education here at St Mary's. With me is Fionnuala Dean, Head of Music, and Emma Jane, one of the music teachers and the choir director. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, Jane.
Hi. I wanted to ask you, obviously the piano is clearly very important at this school. So what do you think music brings to a school like this?
Music has definitely always been a really vital ingredient as a whole. We have had a long legacy. For years before I came, there's always been wonderful choirs, wonderful music making. Derry is a wonderful place for music.
Yes.
It is, you know, I think Derry, really, mm-hmm. there's music everywhere in Derry. And I think we've kind of really tried to build on that here in St Mary's. We're obviously blessed with wonderful pupils mm-hmm. who are...
They're standing here with big smiles on their faces,
but we have been blessed with wonderful pupils who are interested and who are keen and who give up an awful lot of time. And I think it does just add to the life of the school.
So it kind of brings people together, and do you think it kind of has an impact on the kind of other academic work outside of music as well?
Well, music, as you know yourself, requires a great discipline. Mm-hmm. And I think it gives the girls skills that definitely carry on to all other areas of their life. You know, kids can go to the internet, they can download their favourite song, they can get the words of the song, they can get the chords of for the piano or the guitar. But I know that I hear some of our girls doing that, and I think that's wonderful, and I would encourage them to do that because I think it gives them a totally different mm-hmm. outlook yeah. on that. And yeah. I know Hannah here, who's one of our GCSE music students, is very keen on doing that.
So, Hannah Richardson, you sat down now at the piano. Thanks so much. Would you play a little bit for us?
Yep, that's fine.
That's kind of you. Thank you. Fantastic. Thank you so much. You know, meeting someone like Hannah, obviously this is a place that's had some very troubled times and continues to have some, you know, some pretty big social problems. How do you think music and this kind of education in music really helps that and improves it all?
Well, I think it can give young people maybe a direction that they can maybe go in, or it can give them
maybe a different outlook on life. It can maybe remove them. I know certainly I would have grown up in the Troubles. You know, and I would have been in youth orchestra and we'd have all played instruments. And in a way I was in a wee cocoon away from all that because we were doing something different and we were all coming together as musicians and just getting on with life as normal. But it was music and it was the music and having that that maybe did protect me and my friends and, you know, contemporaries that we were growing up with. And I think for the like of Hannah and for young people, there have been, you know, they're very lucky here in Derry. There are a lot of opportunities.
How aware are the girls here of Derry's history? How much does it kind of impact on your lives now?
I think the Gaers are a generation that have been blessed with not growing up with conflict or war. And they do competitions and concerts and events all the time, and Hannah performs regularly in public with different members of the community, and there'll be no bias or fear or any suspicion with different members of the communities now. Hannah herself, I actually went to Inculturland with a mixed audience there, which is essentially Irish Language Centre, and I watched Hannah perform in front of a mixed audience, and Hannah actually sang a song based about Derry, which was fabulous.
Yeah, it's just basically about, like, you know, the troubles that went on in Derry, and just about, like, as I say, like, my granny would have been a big part, like, it would have had a big effect in her life, because she was from, you know, mainly the city centre and the bog and stuff like that. And I know, you know, there's a lot of memorials and all down in the bog now about what happened and, you know, at around that time. And it's just a song that I wrote myself, just about, you know, the stuff that happened during the time.
So we actually do have the choir sitting here, don't we? This is the choir. Shall we do something together?
That would be wonderful.
Okay, let's try.
Okay.
Silent cinema was becoming a popular form of entertainment by the end of the 19th century. There was a huge range of pianists working as accompanists. Even Count Basie did in his early days. Whether it's the local church organist moonlighting in one of the smaller cinemas, or a concert-trained professional leading a 30-piece orchestra at a 4,000-seater cinema in Leicester Square, the emotions of an entire cinema audience were controlled by a single pianist accompanying the film.
There's a huge range of people who play piano for film, and it changes as film develops.
Bryony Dixon, the curator of silent film at the British Film Institute's National Archive.
At the top end, you can get quite well-paid musicians in, you know, big city halls. And then you have got a whole range of pianists who might be very typically in the late 20s, for example. You get young girls playing, really quite young, you know, late teenagers. And they're playing for very much less money than the men get.
Pianos were used because they were the most common instrument of the day. Printed music sometimes came with the films, but the best pianists improvised in reaction to the events on screen.
The worst sins, I think, of the silent film pianists not being very good are people who rigidly stuck to printed music. There's a lady who's part of a small band or orchestra who explains how her orchestra is very good and she uses proper written music, and she's very concerned to deliver it exactly as the composer intends, and that if this doesn't always match up with what's on screen, tough.
A large number of people were employed in the industry, but it wasn't to last.
Since 1895 up until the late 20s, you've had an enormous amount of musicians getting regular employment playing to silent films. At the height, there were probably 16,000 people employed. And when Talking Pictures came in about 28-29, the cinema owners refitted their cinemas with sound equipment and amplifiers to deliver the sound coming off the screen, off the film itself, and the band was no longer needed and they were all sacked. And right at the time that the Great Depression started. So this was very serious for a significant number of musicians.
In the 21st century, there's been a resurgence in silent cinema. In the last few years, it reached the mainstream with new silent films being made, like the Oscar-winning film The Artist. But the most popular silent films being shown are still the classics.
My name's Neil Brand. I'm a silent film pianist and accompanist. And we are on Peckham Rye. It's about 7:40 in the evening. The sky is clear, which is great. And we're slowly accumulating a crowd who have come to see an open-air free performance of Chaplin's The Immigrant and Buster Keaton's Steamboat Bill Jr. I became a silent pianist through a series of weird mistakes. You wouldn't choose to be a silent pianist as a career, any more than you would choose to be a steam train driver as a career. That time is gone. The scene that really helps me to make a connection with the audience is there's a scene where Keaton has gone to a prison to try and get his dad out. And his dad thinks that Keaton is useless and a loser and can't for a moment think that he might have done something very clever. In this instance, he has. Keaton's turned up with a loaf of bread which has got tools in it, and he's trying to smuggle the tools to his dad. And his dad doesn't want to know. And so Keaton, trying to sort of buy time, but also to convince his father that there's something going on he ought to know about, looks at the wall of the prison and sees there's a song up there called The Prisoner's Song. And then fantastically starts to sing it. But while he's singing, he beats time with his hand. Which means as long as I follow his tempo, and as long as I'm playing something that's got that kind of four lines of verse sound to it, then I can accompany Buster Keaton singing. And that moment, the audience just, you can hear the sound of jaws dropping, because it's such a link back. That movie was made in 1927, and suddenly it's not 1927 anymore. Buster Keaton is singing to music that's being cooked up in 2013. Thank you.
My name's Neil Johns, and I'm one of the organisers of the Peckham and Nunhead Free Film Festival. I think the piano brings a real sense of drama, because it can synchronise with the action on screen. I mean, you can imagine having maybe a cello soundtrack, but it would be much more mellow. It's the piano that really brings the kind of humour into it, the light and shade.
Just brilliant. You know, it's amazing to see these silent films with in the way that they would have been seen at the time that they were made, to have that kind of live music company. It's really exciting.
Oh, it's amazing. You have to be really difficult to be synchronised with the movie.
So I'm now in the Three Kings pub in Clerkenwell in London, and I'm here to talk to two men who definitely know a little bit about the other natural habitat of the piano. Well, previously anyway, I'm in a pub. There used to be tons of pubs and pianos, and we've actually brought our one from the street over here into the pub. I'm, of course, talking about the legendary Chaz and Dave.
Thanks
for joining me in the pub with the piano here. Chaz, you're known as the piano playing one, although both of you play piano and actually loads of other instruments as well. Earlier on, I was talking about in this documentary about how important the piano was in the lives of the middle and upper classes. But where you guys were growing up in working class Essex and London, what sort of role did the piano have there?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, a great big role. Piano means so much to me now. My dad died when I was day before I was 4 years old, and my mum virtually brought us up playing the piano in the pubs and clubs around London. Brought so much happiness and puts food on the table, so piano means everything to me.
So it really did, it was a kind of major form of entertainment that you just all joined in with?
Yeah, I mean, we had a piano in the front room, and that was, as I say, after the sadness of my dad dying when I was very young. When family used to come round on a weekend, it was just great to see everybody smiling and my mum playing the piano. And it just, I grew up with the feeling that music is there to make you feel good and to make you smile. That's why me and Dave do it.
In fact, when me and Chaz first started to write songs together, we used to take Daisy, that's Chaz's mum, around with us, and she used to get on the piano in the pubs, and Chaz would have a go. We've always had pianos in our lives, really.
And do you think these pianos were in tune?
No, not always.
Not even a little bit.
Sometimes they were.
Yeah, they were in tune enough, but there was lacked a little bit to be desired, like this one here.
Yeah.
I mean, me and Dave tuned up. We got electronic tuners now, you see, and we used this electronic tune. It was spot on.
Come down here.
And he went, "You've got a tune to this piano, boy."
This piano is it's close, but it's not quite right.
Enough pump to singing out a tune together. It sounds good,
but it's got a certain. I remember seeing Ray Davis on the telly, and I sort of knew what he meant. And he had a real out of tune piano. He said, "You can write good songs on an out of tune piano," and I knew what he meant. It's something about the challenge of it.
It's a piano with character. Would you say you kind of miss those days where you could walk into a pub and there'd be someone playing and there'd be a sing-along?
Well, we turn it into a great big thing anyway. Chaz plays piano, although he's not a pub pianist, but don't really miss them days. I would like, actually, being honest, I would like to see more pianos in pubs. Mm. I would.
So I guess really your start in music came from being around your mum and her playing.
Mm.
And did you know at that point that you wanted to have a career in music, or was it just a natural thing you fell into it?
I was brought up with a musical family anyway who made their own music. My mum was self-taught, but she never put a chord wrong. She knew all the chords, but she didn't know what key she was playing in until I started playing the guitar. I took up the guitar because I'd heard Lonnie Donegan and I wanted to be mum. She had that thing, wanted to come up and say, "Can I sing a song, Daisy?" "Yeah, okay." And they go, they just start, "Give me a smile," and she go, bang, find the right note. She didn't know if it was E-flat, F or C, but she would play it all the way through, all the right chords, but she didn't know what key she was in.
So do you think it's an age thing, that the reason why there aren't really kind of pianos and sing-alongs in pubs anymore? Do you think like a kind of younger generation could kind of get with it?
Well, times change, but I think once they're subjected to it, the younger generation. Chaz's daughter, for instance, she's young, and she plays piano in pubs and clubs, and she packs them out, and they love what she does. young people.
I think there's a bit of English reserve that starts off, you know, and you're like, oh no, I don't want to sing along, and then you have at least a couple of pints, and then you're kind of ready, really.
Yeah, it all gets set on fire, and away you go.
I love that.
No, it's, I hear you. No, I tell you what, we are cheating a bit, but you both brought your guitars along.
Yep.
I've also got our old reclaimed office piano here. This is late 1920s, this was built. And it was a school piano we worked at. It was built to withstand kids jumping on it and me jumping on it as well. And it's a little bit out of tune, but we've got it close. And I thought maybe we could play something off your new album that maybe we could get the people in the pub to sing along with us. Yeah? You sure you're oiled enough? Should we do I Can't Give You Anything But Love?
Cause
I know that one.
That's a good one, yeah.
Cool.
All right, are we ready?
Are we ready? Yeah, let's go.
2, 3, 4, 1. Can't give you anything but love, baby. Love's the only thing I got plenty of, baby. You're sure to find happiness and I guess all the things that you've always pined for. I love to see you looking swell, baby. Diamond bracelets, Woolworth, they don't sell, baby. Till that lucky day, you know damn well, my little baby,
I can't give you anything but
part of my pilgrimage next week, I'll be talking to piano buskers and meeting the talented teenagers who've been given a helping hand by Adele's piano player. I'll also witness the extraordinary effect that piano music can have on the lives of people living with dementia.
We went damn well. Can we come back next week?
Piano Pilgrimage is presented by Jamie Cullum and produced by Andrea Rangecroft. It's a Folded Wing production for BBC Radio 4.